We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
Well, we're having a bit of a rocky start to Dads on the Air for the 27th of October 2009. Welcome to everybody who's joining us on the World Wide Web via the miracles of modern technology. You can hear this while live streaming from the 2GLF website. You can also listen to the program later at www.dadsontheair.net. You can also listen to all our previous shows up there. Our researcher Greg Andreessen has done a wonderful job of relaunching the website just recently, so if you haven't seen it recently, that's dadsontheair.net. Looks terrific. Today we there's only two of us in the studio today, Phil York from Dads in Distress and myself, John Stapleton, so welcome to the show. Today we're going to play later in the morning some of the material from the Men's Health Conference up in Newcastle, which just finished. It's from, we're talking to a lot of the Indigenous leaders that were up there, Drew Cohen, Ashley Gordon, Craig Hammond. They all spoke very movingly about the situation up in the Northern Territory and in Central Australia. Many of them are very upset at the way that they've been portrayed during the intervention, where a lot of the Centrelink payments and so on are controlled. Basically, the men have been portrayed as alcoholic pedophiles, and it's really given a pretty poor name to some a very noble culture and a really noble history. So there's a lot of debate and angst over that government intervention and the way that men are being portrayed up there. We're going to do a couple of news items first, and then we'll be talking with Don Watson first up, who has done an amazing job building all these various sheds for men, these men's groups all around Australia, and they've really taken off. First off, a couple of news items.
And good morning, everyone. First news item from the Australian, wives litigate for greater split. Okay, women are entering into commercial deals with litigation funders as they fight husbands for a bigger slice of the matrimonial pie in the family court. The court's Chief Justice Diana Bryant says she is concerned about burgeoning practice because some parties are litigating more than they should and squandering assets on legal fees. Litigation funding, where a company covers legal costs in return for a success fee, has become widespread in commercial matters in recent years, with cases involving medical negligence and fraudulent company activity providing especially popular. However, some senior judicial figures, such as the Queensland Court of Appeals Judge Patrick Keane, have declared their opposition to some of the sometimes referred as law court punters. Chief Justice Bryant told The Australian last week that funders who backed litigants in return for a fee or a share of the final payout were now having an impact on the business of the court, and that some matters, now long-running, you know, so these companies or organisations are actually funding parents, which is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, and I shake my head at it. The second story, again from The Australian, by Caroline Ovington, forced to tell kids' father's identity. The family court has ordered a married woman to tell two of her five children that her husband is not their father, and to prepare them for a relationship with their long-time lover. The court has declared that the woman's two youngest children were fathered by a builder who started renovating the family's Sydney home in 1994. The woman, known in court documents as Mrs. Tryon, had three young boys when the builder, known as Mr. Cuttlebuck, started work on their house. Sorry, unusual names. She now has two girls as well. The builder says the girls are his, and the family court agrees with him. He is seeking access to them on alternate weekends and school holidays. Miss Tryon and her husband have been fighting the matter for more than 3 years, saying none of the five children are aware of any relationship between the builder and me, the wife. But the court has ruled that the girls are entitled to have a relationship with their biological father, however uncomfortable it may be for Mr. and Mrs. Tryon. The builder told the court he would visit her every morning, and her husband went to work and again in the afternoons. The builder told the court that Mrs. Tryon told him in 2001 that she was pregnant with his child and he attended the birth. In 2003, she again told him that she was pregnant with his child and he again attended the birth. Like, surely this must ring alarm bells, you know. What's this guy doing in the delivery room? Unbelievable. The builder said Mrs. Tryon's husband knew, or must have known, there you go, he was the father of the girls. He said the woman's parents praised him for not making a fuss about it and letting Mr. Tryon pretend to be the father. What a complicated little world we live in. The third news story, also from The Australian, also by Caroline Ovington, spotlight on shared parenting laws. If you are a separated parent and your children are living in a shared care arrangement with your former spouse, who should pay for their school uniforms? Who should pay for the travel between two homes? Who should pay for the annual beach holiday? Is it only the person who goes with the children, or should the cost be split between both parents if that's the only holiday the children will have? These are some of the questions from federal government survey of separated parents in shared parenting agreements. The study, Survey of Shared Care Arrangements for Children After Divorce or Separation, is designed to ascertain exactly how shared parenting is working by quizzing those parents who have entered into such agreements, whether willingly or by order of the family court. The survey seeks to discover how well the arrangements work for parents and children. The study is funded by the Attorney General's Department, but the research is being conducted independently of government by researchers of the University of Sydney, the University of New South Wales, and the Australian Institute of Family Studies. The survey starts by asking the basics: age, gender, how long have you been separated from your ex-partner, etc. It asks separated parents to explain how they came to the current arrangements with their children. Did they reach an agreement on shared care with the help of a lawyer, or did a judge or magistrate set out the terms? It asks whether the shared parenting is what they wanted, and if not, what arrangements would have been preferred, including child live with me all the time. So, you know, here we go again. It's another thing about who pays, and you know, it's a very difficult situation, obviously, when parents are divorcing and they're going through these sorts of things. And I guess you know, when you're married, you don't even think about these sorts of things. But then all of a sudden, when you're thrown into the throes of separation, well, you know, that's it. You know, all these situations come up. Our last story for this morning, again from Caroline Ovington in The Australian, and she writes, shared parenting laws on way out. The Rudd government is planning to roll back the controversial shared parenting law passed in the final term of the Howard government. Enraging men's groups, which say the laws have finally given them access to their children after separation. Six inquiries into the shared parenting laws are now underway, which men's groups have interpreted as a sure sign that change is underway too. In a message to supporters, Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency, who appears on this program regularly, has described the planned rollback as the most sustained and concerted attack on shared parenting she has seen in 15 years. Ms. Price said the laws did no more than encourage reasonable contact between perfectly good fathers and their children, and she has urged supporters to convince the Rudd government that there are a million votes at stake if they roll back the shared parenting changes. War has been declared, and now is the time to protest these changes, Ms. Price said, adding that planned changes were an attempt to deny children shared parenting and an attack on the child's rights to be loved and cared for by a dad on a shared care equal basis. So the family court, the council says that men are approaching the court asking for years-old parenting agreements to be modified so they can pay less child support under the Howard government reforms, Caroline continues to write. Men can pay less in exchange for seeing their children more. The submission says parents are saying they don't want money. They would be happy to forgo maintenance payments if it saves their children from having to spend half the week with a parent who does not want them.
Well, pretty hard to find a parent that doesn't want their kids.
Absolutely.
There's been a lot of hysteria around this issue and a lot of really unfortunate hysteria, particularly by groups like those run by Barbara Biggs, and there's a lot of concern around that right across the country, certainly amongst fathers' groups. Anyway, here is a shared care journal which can make your life much easier. You can look this up at uniquetome.com, the obvious spelling, uniquetome, all one word, .com, and they've launched a shared care journal. You get, as part of the package, $29.95. We don't usually advertise things, but here we go. It's $29.95. You get a plastic pocket, contact details, calendar, journal, a way to keep expenses, and a number of features which just makes life, which, you know, well, shared parenting is a far better alternative than the former nightmare that was imposed upon many children and their fathers. No one pretends that shared parenting is uncomplicated, that sometimes, you know, it does take a little bit of goodwill on everybody's part and a journal to keep track of everything like expenses and days and calendars and so on. It's a good idea. UniqueToMe.com. We'll be back in a moment. We're talking with Ian Watson, who's set up sheds for men right around, particularly in Queensland, but fairly widespread from what I can gather, and we'll be talking to him in a moment. It's Ian Watson. We'll be back.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
Ian, are you there on the line?
Yeah, John, how are you, mate?
Ah, good, how are you?
Yeah, good.
Now, explain it all to us. I gather some years ago you started off doing these meetings and they've just taken off.
Yeah.
Give us a history.
Well, we've been doing the present format for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a la interview type stuff,
yeah,
whereby we would interview four blokes in the night, short and sharp, on real issues.
Mm-hmm.
We are interested in the emotions, the heart, the spirit, the soul, and the spine of man.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't want to talk about the health. That's as part of the well-being and the health of man. Running at my truck yard, I got a big truck driving school up here in the north side of Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
Had that for 20 years prior to that. So that was like the stepping stone, because when you go get your truck license, a heavy rigid license, you probably spend 8 to 10 contact one-on-one hours with the trainer. So over 16-17 years, that chocks up about, you know, 60,000 one-on-one hours. And it was a privilege for me to be with the Aussie male, to get to know him a bit. Prior to that, I've been football passion, coaching and all that sort of stuff, and just interested for man to be who he's created to be, the real deal, feet on the ground, so he's not conditioned by what's around him. He's happy where he is. So,
and do you think blokes are sort of under attack right now? The Aussie male is out of fashion or something? Or
no, we've I wouldn't say quite attack. I think we've just, the lifestyle we young people choose pays a big, we all pay a big price. So we become too busy. So the male, traditionally, we think that we have to earn and work and whatever, but I think the secret in the whole thing is, who is an Aussie male? What's he really, what do we think he really is? He's usually on his own. He goes in and he's quiet. He works hard. He wants to provide. But when things get a bit hard on the emotions and the heart, because we've passed down some of these dumb messages of men don't cry and all that sort of stuff, we work harder. So when we have a problem, we work harder, or we drink harder, or we play harder. So, you know, that's where we want to see the change.
Oh, it's so true too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Men just tend to, they go very quiet often.
Yeah, well, we don't let a bloke get up there in the shed night and just give us some big information download. Aussie blokes don't want to go somewhere and get preached at and feel the guilt and whatever. They want to hear reality. They want to hear whether it's good, bad, happy or sad. There's a boy in every one of us. We want to have a good laugh if we've got the lights dim, we can have a good cry too. And if a bloke's up the front sharing some issue deep and meaningful, and there's a bloke sitting in the group, and we consistently get over 120 every month now, and that's just in our location, a bloke wants to be able to sit there and go, yeah, well, I'm not the only poor bloke that's copping this. So he then gets an opportunity. We finish always at 8:30. An Aussie bloke doesn't like to be sitting around all night long. It's got to be short, sharp and relevant, and you've got to give him a good burger. Don't dare give him a half a burger and stop him putting another bit of cheese on or whatever he wants. So a quick game's a good game. Don't push him and shove him. Don't ask him what's his job or whatever, because he mightn't have a job, or if he hasn't got a degree or he hasn't got money or whatever. Don't do that. Don't put the pressure on an Aussie bloke and make him talk about religion, sex, things that he doesn't want to be cornered at. He's a one-on-one bloke, an Aussie bloke.
It's so true, isn't it? So where is this actual local group of yours?
My truck yard is just off the main M1 at Murrumba Downs. It's just 20 minutes off the Gateway Bridge.
Uh-huh.
Very accessible.
Near Brisbane.
Yeah, just north side. Blokes come from all over. And we don't go looking. We say every bloke's a champion. Every bloke's a champion. Too often now in our beautiful country, we only look at a sports person as a champion, and then we look at that person and he falls, and then we spend all our time talking about this great footballer or cricketer or whatever, and then we destroy him because there's parts of his life that he's a boy.
Yes.
So on these shed nights, we don't go look at... We've had blokes like Brad Thorne and Shane Webke. We've had Duncan Armstrong. I've had the mayor of Moreton Shire. Great guys. They're all good guys. But when they come to shed night, they don't come as big heroes. They come as blokes, and they're in a safe place and a comfortable place, and they actually want to contribute to the betterment of mankind by actually saying what it's like. Most of the issues that we have to contend with. One question you can just about ask most Aussie blokes, how'd you get on with your father in that early part of your life? And they'll say, oh, he's a great guy, but... And they say, well, what's the but part? Oh, well, I didn't see him much, or he was very tough, or he was this, or he was that. So we run around trying to be ticked off by other things and other blokes. Now, if your father... If he hasn't got good mates around and you know his mates, well, we're going to get ticked off as a bloke that you're okay, and we all need it. You need it in your job. You know, you like someone that you trust and whatever to say, John, you're doing a great job. It means a lot to a man to have that affirmation. So that's where we're at. And we don't want a bloke, we don't want any man not to want to come through into my truck yard there because he's not a believer, or he's this, or he doesn't know where he is. We want him to be able to come in and go, well, my name's John, or my name's Ian. We don't care whether your name's Stapleton or it's Watson or it's Webke or whatever. You know, you're a bloke and you're a champion. We want blokes to realise that they are champions created. You know, they weren't created as junk, but the world that we live in, all we constantly hear are negatives and down, pulling people down. And blokes, I heard you talking before about, you know, blokes in separations of whatever. Mate, I meet them every day. Every day. They feel like criminals. Games that are played on them. And they go in and they go quiet. Well, we want those blokes to talk. You know, too many blokes go and take their lives because they don't see any hope. And we want to give Aussie blokes hope.
Oh, these people are completely brutalised, both by the family court and then by the child support agency.
Yeah.
Totally abused emotionally, financially, basically physically, because their health suffers as well.
Well, a lot of the non-physical health comes as a result of the emotional. The experts can tell us that. Now, you know, I've been to the summit in Canberra, Parliament House, talking on men's health issues with the Fatherhood Foundation as an invited person with a whole lot of highly educated professionals. And on that day, we saw one... Now, this is not a political point. There was one bloke came in at the end of the day from the present government to hear, and he said, "Oh, gee, I didn't know this was on. I'd be here early." And I think, well... Yeah, I think the girls have got 1% more votes, so we blokes have to actually plead with the girls to please vote for men's issues in our country. We love the women and they're going great, but we men need to take accountability on who we are, and we need a voice, we need a place.
Oh, it's amazing just looking at all this pink ribbon stuff, which is all very well for women's cancer, but you just... feel like going, don't, it's just as well men don't get cancer, isn't it?
Because well, there's more men die from, I think there's more men die from prostate cancer than breast cancer.
Well, yes, well, at least roughly the same from what I understand.
Well, but what about the suicide?
Yes,
experts tell us there's about 8 or 9 every day in Australia take their lives. That's greater than the road toll, but we spend all our time talking about the road toll. And saving the koalas and saving the whales. I love the whales and I love the trees and I love the koalas. I love them. But we've got 8 Aussie males taking their life every day, and we've got the best country in the world. We've got everything we want. Why have we got mental depressions and whatever in our beautiful place? You know, like,
well, many of those men are separatic men, that's for sure. And the system is entirely to blame for those deaths. There's been no official government inquiry into this. It's outrageous.
I think at the grassroots, John, we must encourage each other as men, no matter who we are, where we are. At our shed night, and we just, one of the blokes one day said, shed happens. Shed happens, what is it? It's a place where a man is comfortable. It can be on the back of a ute, it can be under a tree. And all he needs to do is be able to feel not judged, be able to have the confidence of someone. And an Aussie male is a one-on-one bloke. If you get, you know, 8 to 10 hours in a truck teaching him to bash a Road Ranger gearbox, you can get the heart of an Aussie man. He is a good man. He wants to work. He wants to provide. He's not real huggy and kissy. He's not real good at public compliments. He's likely to say something in reverse to his best mate. But he likes to be spoiled a little bit by his woman. He's wary of bludges, and he doesn't like big mouth, and he doesn't want to go up the front and make a big lot of statements. But when you put it on him and say, mate, you've got something to help people with, he'll say, yeah, okay, I'll talk.
And what, they stand up in front of a crowd of 100 other blokes?
120 blokes. We talk on issues of pornography, sexual addiction. We'll talk about depression. We talk about suicide. We talk about money problems. We talk about we've got blokes who come from they're ex-prisoners. They come through the bad boys club that meet every second week up at Caboolture, encouraged by our fantastic old champion rugby league player Noel Gallagher, Gags. Those blokes can comfortably come to this forum and they can sit there with judges, doctors, whoever. And then we've got another, usually a mini busload of blokes who come out of the fantastic place, the Salvation Army's Drug and Rehabilitation Centre at Red Hill there. Those boys can come out, they can sit there too. Because they don't have to be judged on where they've been. We treat them like men and we want them to realise that they're created champions. You know, there are 4 kinds of champions in my life. At the moment I say Favola from Carlton is a champion full forward. He's made a muck of his social life, so we call him an idiot, unfortunately. But I see Favola the champion footballer. I want to see him the champion bloke. Now, the champion spark plug. You're still into spark plugs?
Yeah.
You're a champion for the cause of men, and I'm a champion for the cause of men. And the other champion is, we didn't get created as junk. You can be a champion son of the king, and that's the one that we all need to acknowledge, not by all these other things that are around us, because we can't get to be the champion sportsman or the champion something else. It's too hard for most of us. So, you know, we tend to go back and go, oh, I'm not good enough. I asked a little 10-year-old boy down at Walla Walla when I was down there a couple of weeks at a shed night where they had 65 herding men off the land that have been in drought for 3 years. I said to this little Joel, I said, g'day, Joel, you're a champion. And he looked at me and I said, don't you know you're a champion? He said, I don't play football. Now, he associated champion with football. I got a grandson who I've called him champ every day of his life. And I said to my grandson, I thought I'll try this out on my grandson, who's 12. I said, g'day, Declan, you're a champion. And he gave me this lovely big smile and I said, you know you're a champion, don't you? And he said, yeah, I know I'm a champion because you tell me.
Oh, isn't it nice? Right? We're talking with Ian Watson. He's established groups around Queensland and is a great communicator with men. We'll be back in a moment.
Right. grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And we're talking with Ian Watson, who runs men's groups, and his philosophy in life, every bloke's a champion. Welcome back to Dads on the Air.
Thanks, John.
Every bloke's a champion. What a great thought. Look, I understand you you work with men's and boys' camps that you run at least one each year.
Yeah, John. I'm involved with the Lutheran school up here at Murrumba Downs, and through that, we have a wonderful opportunity to connect with fathers. We run a men and boys camp every year at my mate's private property, just the most pristine property close to home, so blokes don't have to take hours to get there. It's on the banks of the river, the Pine River. My mate just invests into manhood and boyhood. Now what we do, it's pretty low key, and we do all the boy and man stuff. And have you ever seen a group of boys and a group of men together in the good company? The men don't have to give the boys many instructions. There's just something between us that connects. And just for example, when was the last... Did you ever roll in the dirt? Did you ever really get down and get dirty and muddy and whatever?
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah, okay. But the modern boy today is what he wears. Shoes and socks to school. He gets driven to school. He's got to have the hat on. He's got to have it. He can't go out when it's raining. He can't play football when it's raining. All that stuff.
Oh, no, and if you live in the centre of Sydney, you don't want the kids to go out to play, you know, because it's too dangerous in the street.
We've got a bubble wrap society. We're breeding. It's soft. We're soft. So what we do in this camp is I take my water truck along. We get the black plastic. We put it down the slope, put a bit of the old detergent on it, put a light trickle of water on it, and away we go, sliding down the hill into the dirt. All the dads are hanging around for a while, and I yelled out and said, any of you fathers haven't rolled in the dirt? Now, man, there are men that haven't rolled in the dirt because they haven't had father influences when they were little. They've had too much smother, the lovely smother love. Nothing wrong with that. But if you grow your boyhood from baby up with nothing but smother love and not the directional love, then chances are you may not have got to roll in the dirt. And we regularly have men get out of their shorts and they say, yeah, I need to roll in the dirt. Then we run the boys over and we say, come on, fellas, have a roll in the dirt. Then we usually get up there like a bunch of little boys and we give the old brave heart freedom. Why do we do that? In the creek, we get the old mud on us and whatever, and just carry on and just let go and just relax. The fire's made so boys can get their sticks and play. Have you ever seen a boy that doesn't like a fire? And have you ever seen a boy that doesn't want to put a stick in a fire? Well, we actually do that. Mm. And we actually stand around and are with the boys, and we don't go saying, don't do this, and don't do that, and don't do this, and don't do that. We actually let boys be boys.
That's great.
That's what we do there. Now, when we have every week we have Boys Week. The boys have to volunteer and come to school at 8:15 to 8:30, and then they go in for their day. This year we pick five words. On Monday we talked about wisdom, and I get two young dads to do a short little story, impacting story to the boys about wisdom, taking in good stuff. And then we empower those boys and we affirm them. And we asked the fathers, the grandfathers, anyone to come. Day two was feelings and emotions. How to deal with your anger, boys, little boys. Then we did honesty, and then we did kindness and mercy. And then the last day we did affirmations. And we always put a truckie's breakfast on for the boys on the Friday. And encouragement and power. Every boy needs to know that there's an adult who's crazy about him. Now, this was so successful, the girls said, oh, we're going to have Girls Week. The girls have a fantastic girls' week now. It's not about we don't love the girls. We love the girls, but we want to be the real men for our women, not some wussy little passive little yes man that ends up getting kicked out because we can't please our woman anyway. And so this is how we get connection. And we get young fathers who have every morning off work and come, and a lot of the fathers, I think, get more out of the darn boys' week than a lot of the boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's back to basic, simple stuff. It's connection. When we have shed night, every holiday, school holiday, we within our 120, 130 minute come to shed night, we would have probably 8 or 10 young boys around the 11, 12, 13 mark. We put those boys in the front row. They sit for an hour and a half and listen to all the deep and meaningful stuff that men talk about. They go and get a can of Coke or whatever they want. They can go and have 2 or 3 or 10 Tim Tams if they want. But they sit and they listen. They go home and they talk about what men talk about. We don't boss them around. We don't have to give them a lot of instruction. There's certain things I'm going to do.
No, blokes don't like being bossed around, do they?
Well, we don't. We get our back up. Isn't that the convict thing or something?
I don't know.
I just believe there's so much that boys learn from men. And men are either leading or following. We're either, at any given time of our manhood, we're following someone or we're leading someone, even though we don't know it. I think boys learn to love and respect women from men, not women. They learn to love and respect women from men. Now, if they haven't got a man in their life to see a man loving his mother... We've developed, and the women have done a fantastic job trying to bring up the boys, but there's that part of man that we need to contribute, and we want to do something about it. We men want to do what we're supposed to do with our boys, empower our boys and be with our boys, and not leave it up to the girls. And so the result of that is the girls get a better deal with us blokes. We've got less blokes going into that mental darn ward at the hospital for depressions and all the other darn stuff.
Mm.
We're going to have less blokes going to that prison system with all addictions and whatever.
Mm.
We'll be better at work. Now, what's it cost us?
True. Mate, we haven't got a lot of time, I'm afraid. We could talk forever.
Yeah, mate,
great talker.
Because we Aussie men, man, it's about time we Aussie men said, enough's enough, we're not waiting for the rest of the world to lead men. We Aussie men can lead the world in reform for who we are created to be. We're champions at sport. We can win gold medals. We want to win the gold medal of being champion men.
And so we'll just finish up on what do you think is at the core of the Australian male now? Is it under threat from these changing lifestyles and the changing ideologies? And, I mean, you see so few positive stories about men in the media, for instance. They're just ridiculed constantly. This whole debate about shared parenting, you'd think all men were evil bashers, you know, or don't love their children or just want to get out of child support. All the images, a lot of it paid for by the government, are all negative.
Couple of things. Men, there's a lot of women need to let men be men for the right reasons. We men have got to take a grip of who we are. It's our issue. We are learning to talk about it. It is happening big time. Don't worry, it's under the radar. That's an Aussie male. It's not big up on stage. But believe you me, it is changing. And the saddest thing I see, I've got 3 grown-up sons and grandkids, is that we've devalued the true thing called marriage for the commitment of a marriage. It's been too easy to walk away. And the lifestyle we choose, there's no such thing as when you hit a bump in the road, you go into a little bit of tough love and go through the other side. No, a lot of times we men have been saying, yes, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear, and the girls take us on, they think we're boys, and then they say, you're still a boy. And there's one last thing I'd like to say. The experts tell us that man matures at about 35, in the mid-30s. I reckon that's pretty close to the money. So every footballer that fails now, he's retired before he... Footballers don't get to 35 in the big time.
No, they don't. No.
And we're trying to make out these blokes of these mature... Why don't we let them just play the game and keep microphones out of their mouths and let them be who they are in boys? Now, one thing... Jesus, this bloke called Jesus, the carpenter, he was 33 when he went to the cross to do his father's will. He had this thing with his father. I think there's a significant moment in a man when he hits 33. I've got three sons, one's 40, 38, and 35. I reckon there's some significance. It's about time we let the boys be boys, and when we get into that age...
We're out of time. I'm sorry,
okay.
Ian.
Okay,
look, it's great to talk to you. We'll definitely have you back on. It's fantastic.
On you,
so thank you very much. We've
every
been talking.
Every bloke's a champion. Good
no,
on you, mate.
Every bloke's a champion. We've been talking with Ian Watson, who
thank
runs
you,
men's groups up in Queensland. Thank you so much.
Bye, mate.
Bye.
Dads in distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
We are coming to you from the National Men's Health Gathering in Newcastle, and we're now going to listen to a presentation made by Drew Cowan, who is a psychologist working in the family court in Newcastle, and he has an extensive knowledge of the workings of the family court. His presentation will be on giving kids the best dad they can have, helping fathers and kids to have strong, healthy relationships when they don't live in the same home. It'll be interesting to hear what Drew has to say, and we're now switching over to his presentation.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Drew Cowan. I'm currently working at the Family Court in Newcastle. I'm a psychologist and a family consultant. I've worked for many years in private practice, both in working with adults and children, and working with mediation across many settings. My presentation this morning, I'm very pleased to be able to give it. These thoughts are my thoughts. This is not a presentation of the Family Court. This is a presentation from me. I just happen to work at the Family Court. Happy to answer any questions people might have, but I'm certainly not an apologist for the court, and I make no bones about that. There's no microphone, so I'll attempt to yell. But if people, if I'm dropping off, if someone can wave, thanks. Okay. Well, there are many reasons why kids and their dads don't live in the same home. I think in Australia, the latest statistics that I've read from 2007 say that of the 4.8 million children in Australia, nearly 1 million live in a home where at least one of their natural parents is not present. Of these children, nearly half do not spend any time at all overnight with the parent that doesn't live in their home. Of the children that do spend some time overnight with both of their parents, less than 5% spend equal time with each parent. Now, that statistic has changed very little since the 2007 legislation changes to the Family Court. It may have changed a little bit, but it certainly hasn't changed very much. The vast majority of children who are not living with both parents spend between 5% and 20% of their time with both parents, with the parent with whom they don't normally live. In Australia today, the reality is for those children that are living, that aren't living with both of their parents, the overwhelming majority will be living primarily with their mother and spending some time with their father. Of course, some children don't live with either parent, and there's a huge range of different family structures, but I'll limit myself today to talking about the relationship that kids have with their dad when their dad's not living in the same home as the child primarily lives. Okay. So the challenge for parents, and increasingly the Family Court when parents can't work it out, is how to make arrangements that are in the best interests of the child. How to make arrangements that give the child the best opportunity to not only go okay, but to actually thrive. And that's a real challenge, because some of the issues that are important for the child's development might be in conflict with what might be seen by the adults as the best arrangements, or certainly what's best for them. Okay, well, there are many reasons why kids don't live in the same house as their dad. It would be remiss of me not to talk about violence, because unfortunately, violence is endemic. It is, for many children, violence dominates their life. And unfortunately, today, men are responsible for much of the violence that impacts on children's lives. They're certainly not responsible for all of it, but certainly men have a major part in the violence that impacts on many children's lives. So protecting children from the enormous damage caused by violence is critical to working out parenting arrangements and what's in the best interest of the children. It's critical, it should be critical to parents, and it's certainly critical to the Family Court's operation. Children are not small adults. They think differently, they behave differently, and they perceive the world differently to adults. They have different needs, and often those needs will vary hugely depending on their age and stage in life. Now, there are no easy distinctions when talking about children's development and their maturation. There's a huge range, but it's useful in both research terms and also in practical terms to think about children across various developmental stages. Now, these will, the ages at which children are in developmental stages will vary, but I've attempted to put age ranges around those stages, and these are fairly commonly accepted general age ranges. The earliest stage for children is the period from birth to 3 years, and this is generally referred to as a critical period of attachment or psychological attachment. I was very interested yesterday to hear people talk about attachment, and in some ways it's spoken about as if it is a given. Well, my work with children and with the family court has led me to the conclusion that everybody knows about attachment. Unfortunately, everybody's idea about what attachment is varies enormously. When I talk about attachment, I'm referring to the psychological bond that an infant makes with their carers. Now, it doesn't need to be a parent, it often is, and it doesn't need to be one particular person. It could be a range of people. But in general, children form psychological bonds with their primary carer. The crucial aspect about attachment for children is when it goes well and when it's healthy and uninterrupted, it gives the child a safe base from which they can then explore the world, including exploring relationships with their significant others. Parents, family members, neighbours, preschool teachers, cousins, next door neighbours, all sorts. But the child needs a strong and healthy psychological base in order for them to successfully explore their relationships in the world, not only when they're infants, but right through their childhood and into adulthood. The damage for children when their psychological attachments are dysfunctional or impeded is huge. Various researchers have established links for the children in their social relationships in infancy, their relationships with their peers through school, links with their cognitive performance, truancy, risk-taking behaviour in their teens, success both academically and socially, and also success or otherwise in their adult relationships. I can't emphasise enough the importance of giving children strong, positive psychological attachments in those early years. Now, like all aspects of childhood, the damage that may be done is not necessarily permanent or irretrievable, but it is certainly very difficult to restore the damage that may be done to a child in those early years if they don't have that solid attachment. The attachment process starts from birth, and children begin to recognise faces, smells, sounds of their significant carers. So all of the material that we've been hearing about with the importance of fathers being involved with children is crucial for that attachment process. Richard Fletcher was talking about making fathers central to the whole early childhood experience rather than just an add-on. And several papers have been presented which I think highlights the importance of that. So the attachment process starts very young, from about 6 months through to about 2.5-3 years is generally considered a crucial period for psychological attachment. During this period, children often are increasingly reliant upon their primary carer or their primary attachment figure in order for them to feel safe and for them to be exploring the world, playing, which of course is how infants learn. This has huge implications for arrangements that parents and courts make for children when their parents are not both in the same house. It's pretty simple. When parents are living under the same roof, the child gets regular and frequent and extended period with both parents. It doesn't need to be constant. People need to go out and earn a living. They need to look after their own other responsibilities, but the child's generally in regular contact with both parents. The difficulty, of course, is when parents are not living under the same roof. It's important for children to have regular and frequent time with both parents. The conflict comes when parents try and make arrangements about how this might occur. The court's often responsible for making decisions about shared care arrangements, particularly for infants, where there's a separation. Parents separate from each other. They tend not to want to separate from their children. And it's a very, very difficult balance for the court to make decisions and for parents to make decisions that meets the child's psychological development needs, but also fits into the world of the adults. It would be great if adults could, for example, agree that, well, the child can stay in a stable environment. The child can stay in the one home. And when the child's spending time with mum can be in the home. And when the child's spending time with dad can be in the home. Now, of course, that sounds great from a developmental perspective, but there's very, very, very few families who are able to manage their relationships and manage their lives to enable that to occur. Interestingly, where it does occur, it's usually because of the significant special needs of the child. If a child has significant disability, then sometimes parents can arrange their lives around that. But it rarely occurs, and the numbers are extraordinarily low. So we're faced with a compromise between what's in the best interest of the child developmentally with, well, what works for people in reality. The situation is made much worse when there's conflict. Conflict is extraordinarily damaging to children. It used to be thought that, well, the child can't really talk, or they can't really understand what the arguments are about, or they don't really take much notice when there's physical abuse going on or psychological abuse. The reality, of course, is much different. Neurological research, brain activity research, has clearly established that the brains of infants as young as weeks and months old, there's actual changes in the hard wiring of the infant's brain when they're exposed to violence. Now, often where parents separate, there's either been a long period of conflict or a short period of conflict. Very rarely does separation occur without at least some eggshells being broken. The issue for the children is how to allow their development to proceed and not be inappropriately impacted upon and negatively impacted on by being exposed to ongoing parental conflict. So when we talk about making arrangements for children that meet their needs, one of the things we need to do is protect them from the dangers and the damages of parental conflict.
We're listening to Drew Cowan from the Family Court in Newcastle, the psychologist. We'll be back after the break.
Ignorance, 100% for arrogance. One call from a lawyer gives a dodgy report. So selling their soul for affluence, writing reports that are dubious, which makes their victims furious. They write these reports that are thrown out of court. Their lack of ethics is curious. So beware of shunky psychologists, this self-centered group of narcissists. Their own code of ethics ignored and made useless, withheld to contribute to make our child fatherless, and so we became their antagonists. The lawyer, mother and psychologist, this troika of psychotic anarchists, conspiring to steal our children we love. It's no wonder that we become activists. There's some that they claim to be experts, but for cash they will gladly subvert the innocent child that they're there to protect. This must be exposed to overt. So beware of shunky psychologists, this self-centered group of narcissists. Their own code of ethics ignored and made useless, which helped to contribute to make our child fatherless, and so we became their antagonists. They're hungry for prestige and money, but they're totally lacking in empathy. No conscience they have, and so they're bereft of good judgment as well as credibility. If you question their own code of conduct, the board does their best to obstruct all attempts to obtain the justice deserved for our children who'll see them corrupt. So beware of shunky psychologists, this self-centered group of narcissists. Their own code of ethics ignored and made useless, which helped to contribute to make our child fatherless, and so we became their antagonists. So beware of shunky psychologists, this self-centered group of narcissists. Their own code of ethics ignored and made useless, which helped to contribute to make our child fatherless, and so we became their antagonists. And it's so we became their antagonists. We're back with Dads on the Air.
We're back with Drew Cowan's presentation at the National Men's Health Gathering here in Newcastle.
I don't know what you're doing with the slides, but I know that I'm well on track, so you know, so good luck with that.
Okay. I think everyone can tell that I'm not with you.
The needs of children in those first couple of years are stability. They need to have a stable environment. They need to have consistency in care. They need to have routines. But that's not to say that's absolute, but as much as is possible, that's what's needed for infants and young children up to three. So where arrangements for parenting, when parenting arrangements are made, it needs to make sure that the infant has these major needs met. That's not easy to do. Where there's conflict, it's even more difficult. Children don't need to spend long periods of time with the parent that they're not primarily living, but they do need to spend that time regularly. So, for example, it's much better for an infant to spend 4 hours with a parent that they don't live with, five times a week, which would be, what, a total of 20 hours, than it would be for that infant to go for a whole fortnight without seeing a parent and then spending 2 or 3 days, 48 or 72 hours. Because the child needs to have regular and frequent interaction with both parents. It'd be wonderful if they could spend lots and lots of time with both parents. But the reality is, it's difficult for adults to make those arrangements that are suitable to each other.
Mate, I did make this presentation to any magistrate. Do you think that might help out, or what?
Yes, I will say that my work with the family court means that I'm in close contact with registrars, magistrates and judges, and they are all thinking and caring people. They are all wanting, as I do, for children to have the best possible arrangements. In fact, the most common...
How come dads don't get such a good day?
The most common...
I'm one of those dads on the family with the dirty brother.
Sure.
And he's one of those dads.
The most common thing that I hear in my work at the family court from mums and from dads and from all other parties is that they want what's in the best interests of the child. Well, I can assure you that magistrates and judges and registrars and family consultants also want what's best for the child. Now, the reality is people will have a different expectation about what's best for their child. Dads will come to the family court wanting what they believe to be what's best for their child, as do mums. Every single person that I work with tells me that they want what's best for the child. When the parents can agree on that, that's great. When the parents can't agree on that, the family court needs to make that decision. So it's obviously, it would be inappropriate for me to deal with any particular case, and I don't wish to even try. But I do want to assure you that the family court is dedicated to making decisions that they believe is in the best interest of children. Thank you. Only five.
Only five. Just so we'd have a little bit of time for questions.
The quality of the care that parents, or the quality of the time that parents have with their children, is far more important in many respects than the quantity. And unfortunately, there is a huge focus about the amount of time that children spend with parents. What I've heard over the last day and a half is all the great work that people are trying to do to help fathers have better quality relationships with their children. I think that is crucial to understanding the difficulty that parents have in trying to make arrangements. The reality is that parents will differ on what they think is appropriate parenting. Now, when parents are together, that forms an interesting aspect of the parents' relationship. When the parents separate, that also forms an important and interesting part of their relationship. The rules have changed, though. And for a lot of dads, I think their relationship with the children is often hampered because of their relationship with the child's other parent. And lots and lots of court time and sure angst and frustration that fathers face is trying to deal with their relationship with their ex as it impacts on the time and the quality of the relationship they have with their children.
Is that perhaps because the court generally gives custody to one parent only, which then allows that parent total control over every parenting aspect and can eliminate the other parent out of that child's life?
The two major decisions made by the Family Court and the Federal Magistrates Court, the first one deals with parental responsibility. Now, I don't have the stats, but I was going to say 99%. I'll be confident to say more than 95%. The decisions that are made give equal joint shared responsibility for long-term decision making. So in theory at least, both parents should have equal input into the major decisions that their children are affecting their children. Major health decisions, major educational decisions, cultural decisions. The second aspect deals with time. Now there's lots of things that the family and federal magistrate courts can do well. There are lots that they can't do well. One of the things they don't do well is relationships between exes. In fact, the whole process is quite damaging to the relationships that parents have. So the short answer to your question is yes, I think the family court tends to make decisions about the time that children will spend with parents because they're a court and they need to make black and white orders that are enforceable. Now that says nothing about the relationships between the parents, and of course all the research tells us that probably the biggest impact on a child's well-being when they're in separated families is the quality of the relationship that their parents have with each other. Now that's a real, it's very sad because, you know, for people going through the court system, we know that it's damaging to their relationship. So what the court tries to do is make decisions that will minimise further court action because it's so damaging to the relationship between parents, and that relationship is critical to what's in a child's best interest. How are we going for time?
Well, I think we should let Drew finish and then have probably only just time for two questions. So we don't want to encroach too much on the next half hour. And I would say, I mean, there's a lot of information in here. I couldn't follow it all because we're going, and it'll be on the website, so there's pages and pages.
Okay, I promise I'll cut out the jokes that my son insisted I put in. I do want to give one brief story that I think highlights some of the difficulties for dads. I worked recently with a father who, there is no doubt that he loved his children. He couldn't love them anymore. There is also no doubt that he wanted to have the best relationship he could with his children, and there is no doubt that he wanted to be the best dad he could for his children. He had spent, he told me, $75,000. He told me that he had lost his house, he had lost his employment, he had lost relationships with his own family, and he had been fighting within the family court system for 3.5 years. This man was absolutely desperate and distraught. And the thing that struck me when I was speaking with him, and I've been working with him for well over 12 months on many occasions, but the thing that struck me about this man was that his passion about the wrongs that had beset him, the difficulties that he had encountered with various systems. The reason I think that struck me so much is because when I'd speak with his children, the thing that they would tell me is that they love their dad, but they didn't have much of a relationship with him at all. And it had nothing to do with how much time they were spending with him. It had to do with his inability to separate his enormous needs from the needs of his children. So, for example, when his children were spending this precious time with their dad, as limited as it was, the children just felt harassed and harangued because dad just kept dumping on mum. And it was a real burden for these children. So we were fast approaching the time when the children were saying, well, I don't want to spend time with dad because it's boring and because he's always cranky and he's always upset. Now, that's not to belittle the man. I mean, the man's feelings were genuine. He was in a terrible position. But his inability to separate his own needs from what his children needed was the death knell of his relationship. And that you know, it's incredibly sad for everybody, not least of all the children. I think we might have time for one quick question. Yes, please.
Yeah, I don't know whether you want to answer it for myself or the family law, which side you pick on, but I'm a full-time mental health worker, and my biggest, hardest issue is that it's great once you've got them in the family law court system, but if they both couples refuse to go to Relationship Australia and do the mediation, there's 9 months minimum that, you know, and I've got a client right now, 6 months hasn't seen his child because it hasn't even got to court yet. He can't even get to mediation. If he goes and talks about more, he gets an AVO put against him. He's just come up now, his wife's made sex abuse allegations against him, and we're still sitting waiting for the family law court to give us a date to actually get to it. So once they're in the court system, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's working a lot better than it used to, and I think it's working really well. But it's us guys trying to get our clients to the court system is the worst thing, and this is where all the damage is getting done, because they've got to sit 6 months without seeing them.
It's a massive problem. And during that 6 months, the relationship between parents is damaged enormously.
Is there any from your side of the fence, any tricks or any way we can get these? Or do we just sit back and just hold on
to
these 6 months?
No. I mean, it's the court system. There are procedures. They're very legal and protracted and procedural. But no. I mean, look, people can always apply for cases to be expedited or considered urgent. Now, of course, that's very important. But the court needs to decide, yes, this case is important, which other cases will I bump back in order for this one to jump the queue? That does happen on occasion, but the sad reality is, in a overcrowded, underfunded judicial system, there are waits, and those waits are not good.
I think it's an underfunded in the context that maybe money's getting spent putting blokes in jail.
I think we'll have to stop because we've got two more sessions to go. Drew, if you've got something that you'd like to ask Drew, I think you'd probably make yourself available. I'm assuming something here.
More than happy to talk to anyone about, you know, the enormous problems both within the system I work and within the broader system. More than happy to have that discussion.
And will that paper go up on the website rather than just the slides? I should show you the rest of the slides.
Yes, I'm certainly happy to make that paper available.
I think because it's, I was flicking through and it looks terrific. Let's say thank you. Should have been an hour and a half rather than 25 minutes. But thank you.
We've been listening to Drew Cowan, a psychologist with the family court system in Newcastle. We'll be back after the break.
Well, there won't be much of a break because we're winding up the show now. Yes, that was Drew Cowan, a psychologist for the family court. Many people would see people like him as part of the problem, not part of the solution. And if that interview didn't send a chill down your spine, well, then you're clearly not listening between the lines, so to speak. It has probably the worst reputation of any registry in the country, the Newcastle Registry, and it doesn't take much investigation to find some absolutely shocking and extremely drawn-out cases that have gone through that registry. And we here at Dads on the Air have done our best to expose the conduct of many of these psychologists that are employed through the court system, the evidence, the expert witnesses here in Australia in the court system are the subject of much controversy, and very, very rightly so. But you've heard the views from what's the other side of the fence, really, rather than our side of the fence. One final little item before we wind up. The Child Support Agency, in a wonderful new initiative, has meant that you can now pay your child support using your Visa or MasterCard, credit or debit cards. This means that you can put what is often a theoretical debt made up by someone in the Child Support Agency. It doesn't have to be based on anything but the prejudices of the woman or that you're dealing with. You can now put your debt on Visa or MasterCard at 19.5% interest compounding. So what a great idea to wind up all the separated dads with even more debt than they've got already in an absolutely brutal and insane system.
Absolutely. It's very, very scary stuff. I was at the CSA meeting when they showed us this and brought it up, and I've just got to say, you know, you know, all they said to me was, well, it's more important that the child gets looked after. You know, I brought up about the interest rates and the extra debt that the paying parent will be have to bear, and child support, as usual, said, you know, not their worry. As long as the child's paid for, they don't care how it's paid for.
They deeply, deeply don't care. More than 4,000 of their clients have died since Kevin Rudd became Prime Minister. There is no government inquiry, nothing. The best interest of the child equals a dead dad, as far as they seem to be concerned. We'll be back next week. We will then be talking with some of the Indigenous leaders in the Australian Fatherhood and Men's Movement from that conference. We didn't get time today to get to that. I'd like to thank our guest Ian Watson, very entertaining speaker, and we'll be back next week. Don't forget, you can listen to this at dadsontheair.net.
We'll see you all then. Enjoy your week.
We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads.